What do you think telehealth's role is going forward?
It allows us to get better care. I mean, how many times have you delayed getting care for a musculoskeletal injury or something because you don't want to make the appointment and wait 2 days for the appointment and then drive to the appointment? So we delay care because of the inconvenience.
Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. I'm Mike Katz, Executive Vice President of the T-Mobile Business Group. And today I'm talking with Elizabeth Waco, Chief Executive of Swedish Seattle, which consists of the First Hill and Cherry Hill Hospital campuses. Dr. Waco has been at the epicenter of the medical community's pandemic response, including the accelerated shift to mobile medicine and telehealth care. At Swedish, she ensures quality and excellence in acute care services and builds alignment and partnerships between Swedish's downtown campuses, which consist of 6,500 caregivers. Prior to Swedish, she held leadership positions at Harborview Medical Center, West Seattle Psychiatric Hospital, and Community Psychiatric Clinic. Well, Dr. Waco, thank you so much for being here. I know how busy you are, so it really means a lot that you took the time to do this. So thank you so much for coming.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be present with you here today, so thanks.
Well, I can't even imagine what you and frontline healthcare workers have been going through this last year. And I know a lot of this, in fact, started here in this town. You know, some of the, you know, the first death of COVID was here in Seattle. I wanted to understand from you a little bit, as we've now been through about 18 months of this pandemic, what's changed in healthcare? Like, what are the big things that you've seen that have changed? And what are the challenges that have caused some of those changes?
Well, first, I do kind of want to pause for a second and recognize that this is an unprecedented time in healthcare. What we're experiencing with the pandemic is nothing that I've seen in the last, I mean, I've been in healthcare for 30 years, and I've never seen anything like this. And I think sometimes we all look at each other in awe of what we've accomplished, but at the same time, there's a certain amount of appreciation or thought about the fact that healthcare is gonna change, and I think healthcare in America is gonna look different due to the pandemic. So that's something that's worth recognizing. Okay, so some of the new things that came out of COVID, I mean, who would think there'd be any wins? It's been quite the challenge, but a win, I would say, is telemedicine. So we always had telemedicine, and it was something that we had been trying to develop and grow, but we just weren't really great at launching it. And to do really good telemedicine, you need technology, you need relationships, and then trust. And we've always had the technology. And what I think we didn't really know is, could we build the relationships through that technology? I think, you know, even when I think about my relationship with telemedicine and even teleconferencing, I think we all kind of remember the moment where you were talking to a family member throughout COVID or maybe a colleague and you actually felt connected. Like you felt like you were in the same room with them. Maybe you were discussing something that was really hard. But that moment, you felt connected with that other person. And I think what we realized as we kind of launched ourselves into telemedicine is that as a provider and as a patient, you can get that through telemedicine and you can build that relationship. So once we kind of made it past that, then I think the big thing was probably trust. You know, you have to trust that as a patient, the physician is going to be able to care for you in a remote way. And then as a provider, you have to trust that your patient can take their blood pressure, can take their glucose, can take their temperature, and kind of give you that information in an accurate way. And I think we found that we can do that like really well, exceptionally, actually. And I think this is something that's probably going to stay with us for some time. The biggest challenge that we've experienced is really our workforce. And honestly, that's what keeps me up at night. We don't have enough caregivers to take care of the population that we have right now. And that is hands down, I would say, my biggest stressor right now in my work. And the reasons are manyfold. Healthcare, our care workers, it's an aging population. I mean, a lot of them are baby boomers. So retirements are impending. And I think there were probably a lot of retirements that happened sooner due to COVID. Throughout COVID, there's been a personal stress that people have taken on because now you're going to work and you're potentially contracting a disease yourself or you're bringing it to your loved ones, your friends, your family. And I mean, I don't think many of us anticipate going to work and putting our families at risk, you know, so that's something new. Healthcare has always relied on agency workers or travelers, and with kind of the whole nation struggling, a lot of the workers that we've been able to get historically, we haven't been able to get. And then I would say the last part is just the stress. I mean, the last 18 months have been so stressful. They've been stressful for our community. They've been stressful for the healthcare workers. You're working double shifts, you're working overtime. You're working sequentially days and days in a row. And I would say initially at the beginning of the pandemic, we kind of felt like the world was with us. Our communities were with us. I mean, people delivered food to the hospital every single day. We got thank you cards from children that were not in school. And that's all kind of ended. And the community has kind of moved on. But yet we are still like in the thick of it, dealing with the patients that we have today. And so there's a certain amount of loneliness in that that we're experiencing now that we didn't have at the beginning of the pandemic. So, you know, ultimately this isn't gonna change. I don't think our world's gonna change, and we're gonna have to reinvent how we deliver healthcare. And I think the models that we have today are not gonna be the models that we have in the future.
I have so many questions about what you just said, and I wanna come back to telehealth because I'm fascinated with telehealth, but I can't miss the opportunity to understand and learn more about what's happening with our frontline healthcare workers, because what you just told is in many ways heartbreaking, because they really are heroes, and they've been the heroes throughout the course of this entire pandemic. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Are things getting better? Like what you know, you read a lot in the media about what's happening recently with hospitalizations and surge in hospitalizations, but what are you seeing sitting in the front lines?
Well, you know, the Delta variant is real. There are still a large number that are unvaccinated, and they are getting sick and they are coming to hospital. And I don't know that people realize that right now we have more patients that are on breathing machines than we have ever had in the 18 months of the pandemic. And at my downtown hospital, we have brought out new ventilators because we actually didn't have enough ventilators to take care of the patients that we have. So it's real. When you look at the statistics, the statistics have plateaued, meaning we will stay at this current state until December is kind of the prediction. We call it living on the plateau. And we have kind of redone how we're delivering care every day. We run our incident command and we rework our numbers to figure out how we can take care of more people. So it's a challenge. It's really difficult right now. So if you know a healthcare worker, you should hug that healthcare worker because they're working very hard.
Yeah, speaking of that, what can we do? And one specific question that I had for you is, I also know you've got a lot of background in mental health. And one of the things that I don't think gets talked about enough in context of this pandemic is mental health. And I wanted to ask about the general population, but since we're talking about frontline healthcare workers, how can we help and how should we help frontline workers through the stresses of what they're dealing with, especially with that combined with, I'm sure, massive fatigue because it's been nonstop.
The number one thing you can do is really think about getting vaccinated. I know it's a personal decision for many people, and I understand that, but really think about getting vaccinated. It's the unvaccinated that are showing up in the hospital. It's the unvaccinated that are incredibly ill, and that's something you could actually do something about. What you can do for a healthcare worker is, I think just support, just knowing that you're with them and that you understand what they're going through and that you appreciate the work that they're doing. I think that would go a long way for helping them feel like they're supported in the work that they're doing.
Is it, as you think about the long-term support for frontline healthcare workers, is there more help that's needed in mental health and stress management? Is there formal programs that have been or will be developed to help through those challenges?
Well, we've certainly done a lot for our caregivers. We have set up a lot of, interesting that you say telemedicine, but tele-support. We offer it free for all of our caregivers. We do check-ins. The managers check in with the leaders to make sure they're doing okay. The leaders check in with the frontline workers to make sure they're feeling supported. And I think community support, not having schools, not having the clergy, not having the churches open, like a lot of ways that people get support from their community haven't existed throughout COVID. Some of those are starting to return. But I think really taking a moment to pause and assess your mental state. And then if you need help, really seeking out and getting that help. It's more and more accessible now. We offer it to our caregivers for free. And I know that if you go to your healthcare worker, they'll be able to connect you with somebody and you can do it remotely now.
But between everything that you just talked about with healthcare workers, but also I think about, both with the people I see and the people in my community, as well as what I read about with non-healthcare workers and the stresses that they've have been under over this last 18 months with COVID, not even because of being infected themselves, but just because of isolation and everything else. Are you seeing that manifest into the healthcare system?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot more depression. There's a lot more engaging of our mental health workers now than I think there ever have been in the past. Loneliness is real. So I think finding a way to connect with other human beings in the place that you're at is really important. Even if you feel like your community is broad and you're supported, I think sometimes it's really important to look around and see the people around you, and maybe they don't have the same connections that you have. So reaching out to them is super important. And if that's saying hi, if that's checking on your neighbor, if that's calling somebody, I think we do need to resume those Sunday night dinners. And if it's not a dinner, then it's a telephone call where you connect with someone.
Well, before I move on, I can't say this enough during the interview, but just thank you. Thank you to you. Thank you to all the people that are in the healthcare system, in the hospitals, on the front lines, because I can't, like I said at the beginning, I can't even imagine what you all have been through this year. And even if the meals aren't still coming, I know these communities appreciate you now more than ever. So thank you for that. I did want to talk more about telehealth, and it sounds like that has been one of the things that's really been leveraged throughout the pandemic, maybe a bright spot in terms of being able to extend the scale of services that you can provide. What do you think telehealth's role is going forward? You know, hopefully someday, COVID isn't the top headline across the country, but what do you think the role of telehealth will be, and do you see it evolving or changing at all?
Well, I think telehealth is with us forever, which is a good thing. I mean, we talk about our workforce issues when in reality, telemedicine addresses that for us, because it just takes less people to run a teleclinic than it does to take an actual clinic. And then even as patients, it allows us to get better care. I mean, how many times have you delayed getting care for a musculoskeletal injury or something because you didn't want to drive, you don't want to make the appointment, wait 2 days for the appointment, and then drive to the appointment, wait in the waiting room, see the provider, get labs afterwards. I mean, by the time you're done, like 4 hours to maybe your entire day is gone. So we delay care because of the inconvenience. So now with telemedicine, you can, go on your day, get off a conference call, and then kind of get right on to your conversation with your physician for 20 minutes. And then, on the way home, drive through and pick up your prescription. So it allows us to, I think, get care sooner and more efficiently. So I see this as kind of care of our future. And I think we're doing a really good job. I imagine we're probably going to get even better. Like if we can get to the point where we can monitor like blood pressure or glucose electronically, and then maybe you can even trigger to say, hey, you need an appointment preemptively. Like think of the amazing care we could get with a little AI technology in there.
Yeah. Well, speaking of AI, are there technologies like AI that you look at and are excited about in terms of enhancing the experience of telehealth?
We don't have anything really great that we use right now. We do have a lot of remote, but it requires people on both sides. And I know that I've been speaking a lot about kind of direct physician to patient telemedicine, but there's always, physician to physician telemedicine. So sometimes you need to call in a specialist, and you know how you're talking about mental health and depression. So if you're seeing a patient in the clinic and you're a family medicine provider, you can telemedicine in a psychiatrist to come in and have a conversation with your patient if you feel like they're depressed or they might need a little help or start a conversation. So there's lots of ways that we can do it. The AI side of it, I think, is fun and something that's a potential for the future that I hope to see us going towards.
What about things like, have you thought about VR, AR, maybe the applications for those in that kind of setting? If not, we can show you some stuff here.
So we use that for training, certainly for our surgeons and surgical training to kind of visualize the environment and allow you to provide remote surgery. So I think that would be awesome, but I'd love to check out your environment also, because I'm sure what you have is above and beyond anything I've ever seen.
Yeah. As you think about the expanded use of telehealth, one of the things that we saw when the pandemic started, especially in the school environment, when kids couldn't do school anymore unless they had broadband connections because school went fully virtualized, it really underscored the fact that the digital divide is real. Mm-hmm. And there's people that lack critical digital capabilities to be able to fully participate in an environment like school. Are you seeing anything similar with telehealth? Is that a concern for you? And if so, do you have thoughts on what could be done about it?
You know, I would have thought that, but it is amazing. They say that even in Africa, everybody has a cell phone. So, you know, everybody in America pretty much has a cell phone. And if you have a cell phone, you can get telemedicine, right? Because all it takes is the video and all cell phones have it. So you can remotely have that conversation. Like, could it be better? Yes, it could be. But I think what we have right now is enough to move forward.
That's great to hear because, you know, it feels like a lot of the challenges that you said that cause people to maybe delay regular healthcare are real issues, especially for people in rural areas and stuff like that. So I'm glad to hear that you haven't seen that be a big barrier to people getting care through telehealth. Do you think in this telehealth environment, what's the right balance between kind of fully virtualized telehealth and actually coming in and physically seeing your doctor? Are there things or are there benefits that you just can't fully take advantage of in a virtual environment?
We will always have the in-person visit. I imagine the in-person visit really being augmented by telemedicine. You know, as a physician, there's sometimes when you get a patient and the patient's actually sitting in front of you and there are things that you see that you just wouldn't see through telemedicine. And it, you know, it's using all five of your senses. I mean, there's more to it than just kind of what you've learned in the books, and some of it you just sense. Some diagnoses come by visually looking at the patient. So I don't think in-person visits will completely go away. I think they're going to be augmented to a significant degree. So you can imagine that now you cannot see your surgeon until the day of surgery. So you can, you know, have your complete assessment done ahead of time. You walk in day of surgery, you see your surgeon. All post-op visits are done through telemedicine. Now, for a surgeon, the biggest thing post-op is wound management. And who would have thought that you would be able to, through telemedicine, tell whether or not a wound is infected, whether or not they need to come in person. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive what we've been able to accomplish.
Have you done any, I don't know if this is something that you did in the pre-COVID less telemedicine environment, but are there like satisfaction studies that you do with patients? And have you compared satisfaction to telehealth versus kind of physical healthcare?
We do. We send out the post-survey comments. And I haven't seen like a compiling of all the results. I have, you know, specific responses from certain patients, and a lot of it has been positive. And, you know, of course it's going to be positive because the option right now was no care versus telemedicine care. So I think it will probably take some time to really, in a more relaxed environment, get the response from the patients. But overall, I would say patients are more than happy to be able to receive care any way that they could get it. And they've been impressed with telemedicine also because they've asked for their future visits to be through telemedicine as opposed to in person.
You mentioned just the huge strain on the system overall and you know, the challenges in getting enough human capacity to be able to manage what's happening in the healthcare environment. Has telehealth helped you kind of yield manage the demand that you have? One of the reasons I ask is we work really closely with the VA. And when they first started using telehealth pre-COVID, one of the reasons that they did it was they had lots of rural veterans. And, you know, it allowed them to access medicine a little bit more easily, but it also allowed them to leverage healthcare providers at hospitals that weren't necessarily in the same state as them. So they could actually get appointments faster. I don't know if you've seen a similar effect in your environment.
We definitely have, and that's really providing support in the communities around our critical access hospitals that might not have ICU docs but yet are taking care of patients. So they can kind of tele in and get support from our critical care team to get telemedicine. So they'll be able to video in, they can look at the patient, they can help with the diagnoses, help them with prescribing the medications. So it's been a pretty significant support that our teams have done kind of external to Eastern Washington and other places. Also, we partner with Alaska and Idaho. So it's been great, I have to say. And we've utilized it. And it has helped with the workforce because there's only so many physicians. There's only so many ARMPs. And if this helps expand them, then it's a great use.
You mentioned earlier the importance of vaccination and the fact that you're seeing so many, unfortunately, the patients that have to get hospitalized being unvaccinated. And I know Swedish has done a lot of work taking vaccination on wheels and going out into communities, sometimes communities that are underserved. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how that's worked, and then what the role of that is going forward?
I think that was probably one of my brightest moments in COVID. Initially, when the vaccine came out, Swedish wanted to be able to distribute the vaccine for our community. I mean, our mission is to improve the health and well-being of each person that we serve, and that's not necessarily within the walls of the hospital. It's outside in our community. So we wanted to set up vaccination clinics, and to do that, we partnered with Seattle U. We set up a vaccination clinic. It went amazingly well. And then we looked at the data on the vaccination clinic. And when we looked at the data, we saw that we were missing a whole subset of the population that just wasn't getting vaccinated. And a majority of those were our minorities. So we thought, how can we serve that community in a different way? Because clearly coming to these clinics was a barrier for them. And a lot of it was around kind of technology, right? You had to be able to, the minute when we release spots, get on your phone or your computer and access a spot. You have to be able to take off in the middle of the day, wait in line. And those were things that these communities just weren't able to do. So we partnered with local organizations, and we realized that to get to those locations, we would have to set up mobile clinics. And for those clinics to be effective, they really needed to be kind of pop-up clinics. So in a parking lot, in a park, wherever they needed us, we needed to be able to set up a clinic. So we had the tents, we had the generators, we had the people, but what we didn't have was Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi was incredibly important because you have to be able to upload the patient's information into the Washington State database. So we reached out to T-Mobile. So thank you so much for everything that you did for us. So you came out and you donated the Wi-Fi for our clinics. You sent your team out ahead of time to make sure the connections would be okay at the sites. And because of that, we were able to deliver care at 21 different locations and care for 9,000 people in our community. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for telling that story. I wasn't intending for that to be a shameless plug, but we'll take it anyway. Do you see a role for that going forward? Because it feels like both with how effective the vaccines have been and the fact it looks like continuing to stay up on your boosters is going to be really important. Do you think bringing vaccines to this mobile environment is something that will be a long-term strategy for Swedish?
I think it's definitely something that will continue, especially as we move into boosters and then flu vaccines. So everybody get your flu vaccination. We think that this year might be a particularly heavy year for the flu. It tends to come in cycles. So last year was light, so we anticipate this year will be heavy. So really getting the COVID boosters out and getting everyone their flu vaccinations mobile is a fantastic way to do it. It works really well, and it gets to the people that really need it.
As you look back on this last year and a half, anything that you kind of reflect back on that's been inspiring for you? Things that in such a hard year with so much tragedy, anything that you look back on and are just inspired by?
I am inspired by our team and the frontline caregivers. We just accomplished so much in the last 18 months, more than I ever would have thought we would have been able to do. And all with love in our hearts and a smile on our faces. And it's been truly inspirational to know that you're working side by side with people who are so dedicated to kind of the human plight and really are working to make everybody's life better and giving so selflessly of themselves to do that. I mean, to watch that in action, I've never experienced anything like it.
It's, obviously we're all outsiders looking in, but it's been amazing. It's been amazing to see what your teams have been able to accomplish, especially here in this community, where it feels like, we were on the front lines with you first. So thank you again for everything that you and your team have done. It's just been incredible to watch. Do you mind doing some rapid fire questions?
No, sure. Okay. Happy to.
And I know you're a Midwesterner, but I think you've been in Seattle long enough to be able to answer this question. Favorite Seattle coffee shop?
Oh, Cafe Javisi. It's by my home. They have crepes. The children love it. So that's it.
It's getting to this season again, unfortunately. I'm looking outside and it's back to rainy days in Seattle. What's your favorite rainy day activity in Seattle?
Oh, I'm a reader. So definitely reading.
Okay. Go-to comfort food?
Ethiopian food.
Ethiopian? Favorite candy?
Candy. Twix. There's nothing two sticks a Twix can't fix.
And you get to.
I mean, and you get to.
Any nicknames?
For
you.
Okay. All right, I'll give it away. It is a secret. So I go by Elsie. My name, my parents are Ethiopian, so it's Elizabeth, but they really say Elsabet. So I go by Elsie.
Okay, well, it's not a secret anymore.
No, it's not.
You're welcome. You just said you're a reader. What's your favorite book of all time?
Cutting for Stone by Abraham Varghese. Now, granted, I'm a reader, so that's it, right? It's hard for me to commit 100%, but Cutting for Stone is just, it's about medicine, it's about life, it's about love and culture. It's a lovely book.
Seattle's a music town, so favorite musical artist?
Queen Bee, Beyonce.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
You can.
And then last but not least, what's your best or favorite show that you've recently binge-watched?
I'm a reader, so I don't binge. I generally don't watch anything. But with the kids, I am watching on Netflix Family Reunion, and it's kind of fun.
Okay. Well, thank you again so much. We can't underscore how much we appreciate everything that you and your teams are doing for this community. It's been incredible to watch. And it's such, honestly, for all of us, it's such a relief to know that if we have a problem, that we have people like you and your teams that are there to help us. It's such a huge relief. So thank you so much for doing this. It was great to see you, and I appreciate it because I know how busy you are.
Oh, thank you. You're so very welcome.
Also, as part of Project 10 Million, T-Mobile donates to schools chosen by our guests for each episode. This time, Dr. Waco is helping us close the homework gap by directing a donation to Sunnyside School District in Washington. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on Taking Care of Business.